Blog Talk Radio.
Stop here. He's falling. I'm trying to see if the blog talk is also working. Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3. We're going to see if we could get a show. Testing 1, 2, 3.
Once in a lifetime does an author bring us such amazing stories filled with inspirational characters and adventures. Renowned American author Don S. McClure. In his book, Romantic Images of You, he pulls at your heartstrings with a couple that meet and fall deeply in love. You continue following this amazing love affair in The Gods and the Beginning of Life. In his book, I Love Writing a Fun Love Story, you meet a young writer who doesn't want to be famous and fights with his publisher to keep his life private. Within his books, you travel overseas in My Sister Tiana, a spy thriller unmatched by any other. And when you read To Have a Friend, one of the best crime thrillers ever written, you find yourself wanting to save a life of someone you know. And on your journey through his writings, you examine your faith in Dark Side of the Earth, Demons and Angels at First Glance. His abilities send our children on adventures to reach for the best in life, to believe in self-worth, and dreams do come true. Stories that warm the heart and leaves the reader with a smile. In Santa Claus vs. the Aliens, and Santa Claus and the Robot Wars. Once in a lifetime does an author bring us such a... Once in a lifetime does an author...
Hey, Steve.
Hey.
Yeah, I got you.
We're good? Okay, cool. All right,
yeah,
so...
Let me try one little thing. Stay there for a second. If you can hear this...
Sure.
Once in a lifetime does an author bring us such amazing stories.
Yeah, I can hear that.
Okay, you could hear it?
Yep.
Okay, all right, well, we're good to go.
All right, cool. So we'll just kind of reverse it then, and then I'll just do my intro. And just real quick, so just a couple of quick, so I got some intro stuff because I had a chance to look a little bit, but I want to make sure it's right. How many books have you written altogether?
12, and I'm working on 2 right now at the same time.
Wow, okay.
So I've got 12 on the market.
Okay. 12, working on 2 at the same time. And then you're also an inventor. You invented a board game, correct?
Right, and that's based on my children's book stories.
Cool. Your actual kids, right?
Yeah.
No, your kid,
the
kids, your kids, your own kids.
What it is I've written 2 children's books, and it's called The Natural Stage of Progression. So what you do is, kind of like Walt Disney, you go from the animation, then you go to the objects. You show Snow White in the stores and stuff like that.
Oh, cool. Yeah, okay. Cool. All right. All right. I'm going to, and then I'm just going to, and I'm going to just let you run. Just tell me where you came from, and then I'll just, we'll sit back. And then we'll just have a conversation. That's all I'm thinking about. That's what we'll do. It'll be great. And we'll just let it roll.
Yeah.
See where it goes.
All
right, cool.
Yeah.
All right. So I'll just go. 3, 2, 1, and then I'll just do like an intro. And then of course, you can send me this raw MP3, and I'll edit it all down, and we'll be all set. So, all right, here we go. Ready? Okay.
Yeah.
3, 2, 1. Hey, ladies and gentlemen. I am really, really honored and privileged to be able to tell you that my very first interview at the Big Jazz Show is with somebody that I admire quite a bit. And I actually had an opportunity to be a guest on his show. He's an internationally known author, has written 12 books, and from what I understand is also working on two right now at the same time. He's an inventor. He created a board game. He's written kids books. This guy is unbelievable. And of course that's Mr. Don S. McClure. And those of you that are fans of the Twin Cities Radio Network know Don's work, especially if you've listened to Wes Smooth Jazz Sundays, and Don is a favorite of ours, and I'm very privileged to have him with me right here. Don, how are you doing, sir?
Man, I am doing great, Stephen. And I've always baffled between, do I call you the big sax man or do I call you? So you have to let me know which one is the appropriate.
You can call me Steve there, Steve, Steven, whatever you want is fine. You can call me whatever you want, Don. It's all good.
Yeah, we'll call you the big sax man. Now, that's cool with me.
Okay. All right. Cool. Well, really happy that you're on the show. And again, like I had mentioned, you're the maiden voyage interview that hopefully we'll set the standard for many more interviews, but I was really thrilled that you had time to do this. So, you know, for the people that know your background, it's like hearing a great story. You want to hear it over and over again. But for those of the folks who are listening for the first time or aren't familiar with your background, you know me, Don, we talk privately. I'm all about, let's talk about the origins of oneself. Where'd you come from? What inspired you to become a writer? You know, what did that look like to you as a kid? And I'm just going to shut up, sit back here, and you tell us kind of your. I just want to hear your story. I want the people listening to hear your story.
Okay. Well, the thing is, I grew up in Chicago, Illinois, on the west side of Chicago. That everybody kind of, you know, they talk about the west side as if like it had no culture, no education. It was the worst side of the city, and actually, it really wasn't. I had a great growing up on the west side of Chicago. We started like on Lake Street, where my mother and father used to listen to Muddy Waters and all the blues guys, because we lived on Lake Street for a short period of time. And then we moved from Lake Street to what we call Hamlin, which is now called the North Lawndale area. But actually, we didn't know it was Lawndale back then. It was just the west side of Chicago and Hamlin and Ogden. So while you're growing up in these communities, you have these sort of different adventures. And at that time, you're spending a lot of time watching TV, getting involved in movies, but your most impression, starting to grow up with all these great, phenomenal stories that you're listening to. So what happens, you start to digest that stuff. And you try to become what you actually see on TV, what you get a little bit of the reading, but mostly TV and movies. And as you're going through school, you're identifying with all the stuff that you see. So while you're out there in your backyard, let's say like on Hamlin Avenue, you're out there in the backyard and you're playing and you're fighting all these wars, like you're on the ships of Spain, you're in England, you're part of the Roman Empire, and all this is playing movement on your psyche. So you're watching one of the greatest writers in the world, Alexander Dumas and the Three Musketeers. But at that time, you don't know he's black. So you're growing up idolizing the Three Musketeers, the Man in the Iron Mask, the Count of Monte Cristo. Now, you don't know that all this is written by a black man till later on in life, but you're admiring his storyline. So as you're growing, you start to say, these are the people I can be. This is where the courage comes from, you know, where they're fighting the wars and they want to save the damsel and they got this honor and men believe in honor at the same time. So all this is going into your psyche. So you're in your little backyard and you're fighting trees and playing that you're a great warrior and you have all these little soldiers that you play with. Well, that's the beginning stages from being exposed to great writers. Now, you don't know you're going to be a great writer. You just know you admire their stories. So as you start to get older and your whole world starts to shape, you still aren't aware that you're growing up in a poor community from what I guess the statistics say. Food every day. You have the best friends you go to school with. You're playing outside. And you're running up and down the streets doing all these great things on Hamlin and Ogden. And you're going to like an elementary school. You leave there from Lake Street, which was Hayes, Then you go to William Penn, and you don't know who William Penn is named after. You just know it's a good school because your friends are there. So you leave William Penn, and then you go to Mason Junior High, and you're carrying all this information with you that you've seen on TV. And so at that time, you start learning about the Constitution and the preamble and everything that America supposedly did, but you're still internalizing who you want to become. So that writing skill, you always wanted to be in the creative field, always. It just started off because that's who you idolize. And so I've always been up under the understanding that once you start to really develop with icons and images of what they do, then you internalize that. So it went from that to always being driven. That was the most important part of my life, being driven for success. Well, of course, you have older brothers and sisters that you see them going off to do things. And matter of fact, one of my brothers used to play with Ramsey Lewis shortly. He had a little jazz group. His name is Marvin McClure. He played a lot of that jazz that you play on your show. He goes back to Big Maybell, Sonny Stitt. So you're looking at all this environment saying you can be something, and you're internalizing that. So as you start to get older, you say, what is it that I want to do in life? I want to be successful. And I think that's one of the things that everybody wants to grow with. So definitely school was so important because that's where your friends were. That's where your life began. That was everything.
But you were encouraged to read, I'm assuming. I mean, in order for you to be able to know who these characters are and understand, you were reading at a young age, from what I understand, what you're saying.
Oh, yeah, I was reading at a young age, but also I found out the difference in where everybody was getting their history from, that you had the adventure side, which is going back to the writing. The writing was just the principles, like, this is what the person did, this is how it was. But the movies took it and added the adventure to it. All right, let's just say like England. They're fighting with the Armada. Now, in the book, they explain about Philip of Spain. But in the movies, you get to see Tyrone Power, you get to see Errol Flynn, and you get to see them playing out these characters visually. So they're impacting your mental psyche from the visual side because you've already read it. But it's kind of like reading America Got Started or 1776. But when you see those flags in the movies, it impacts you greater than just reading the book. So you have both vehicles, just like in history. When you're going to school, they tell you about all the great things that happen. But that impact is what Hollywood takes, which teaches you how to write. The greatest writers in the world are in film and television because they got to take that character and they got to find an actor to make you believe she's either going to the dungeons, and you're not going to get all that from the book side. The book side is the structure, but you're hoping to take your books one day and turn them into movies. And that's what guides you. That's what was guiding me. I saw all these great things that I said I can write, but I want to be able to one day get into the visual side of it. And I always say I want to be like a Black Walt Disney. And people say, really? I say, well, look at it. He took a mouse in a book, flipped it through, and then later on he took that mouse and put him in Fantasia, in the animation. And it became so alive because you got to see the broom move, that sometimes in the books you're going to have the structure and you have to write that kind of thing. Now, I started writing early in life because I knew that that's what I wanted to do. But my driving point was always to be in the arts, to be a producer, to be a great writer, like Dumas. So it started with, you're reading, you're getting involved in it, but you found that one icon that you believe was better than any icon in the world. So you started reading more about him. You started studying different films, seeing the people that wrote these stories, and you wanted to know why they wrote them. They weren't just movies anymore. I remember when I went to the movie called The Vikings, and this is older than some of your listeners out there. But anyway, I'm so impressed with Kirk Douglas. Well, Tony Curtis plays his brother in the film, and he kills Kirk Douglas in the film. So for a year, I hated Tony Curtis because he killed my favorite actor. So my brother and him said, Don, it's just a movie. I go like, he killed Kirk Douglas. But it was such an impactful movie that I wouldn't watch any of Tony Curtis's movies for a whole year. People can say, man, you really hate him. I said, I hate him. He killed me. But that shows you the art of taking the written word and putting it on screen for you to digest it. So I believe to be a great writer, you've got to see the visual side along with the written word. So what I do as a writer growing up, I actually have the covers produced first so that I can look at those covers and then decide on how I want that character to be. So as you're going through school, you know, you're very adventurous. You're still trying to find your way. But I didn't start getting into writing really heavily until later on in life, where I was actually in corporate and I wanted to educate young students. And I wrote this book called Mansa, The Legend of Evil. And I remember seeing how Hollywood did it. So when I write with such impact. It had no pictures in it. And this one teacher took it to her class. And she said that whenever the students acted up, she would tell them, then you can't read this book in class. And they would straighten out. And she said, when they read your stories, they see such visualization that they just put themselves in the characters. So that's why I say you have to have the imagination, but somebody's got to drive that imagination visually. Then you can write it even better because you can feel it. And that's what a lot of those older movies do. So when I became a writer, I wanted to be like all the great producers and the great writers that were out there. But Alexandre Dumas was the major writer that I found was so amazing in The Three Musketeers and his adventures and how he drew these characters. And he did write it first. Matter of fact, he wrote so many stories quickly that he was taken to court by a gentleman who said nobody could write being prolific at that time. And he told the judge, he said, well, how do you write these stories over and over again and just crank them out? He said, I have a battery of secretaries. So after I do the book, then they sit down and they type it all out. But he took the stories of what was actually happening in Spain, in England, and in France, and these were real characters that you're reading about. He just changed the names. Matter of fact, father was close to St. George, who's one of the greatest music composers, but he was also one of the greatest fencers in all of Europe. So he takes his skill and puts his fencing skills, a real black man, inside of his stories. And so he's telling all these stories at Versailles and the kingdoms. And that's what taught me, how do you write? You take real incidences and you make them fictional, but they're still realistically factual. And
sure,
that's the way a good writer starts. Yeah. So it's just been a joy to start off writing like that and finding the stories inside of your heart. I always say a good writer, you have to have real imagination and emotion. And you can get good editors, but if you don't have that good emotion and imagination and become these different characters at the same time, you got to speak for a young girl, you got to speak for her father, you got to have a conversation with her girlfriends, you got to have a conversation with the teachers, and you got to blend all this in seconds. And if you take those older movies, The Count of Monte Cristo or The Maltese Falcon, and watch the way the characters interact, because there are no special effects. So you get the characters on screen, and those characters are coming from the book.
And that's what I love about the old movies. It's funny you mentioned that, Don, is because, you know, you don't have special effects in them. We're talking about movies from the 30s and the 40s and you know, in the 50s. Some, it's dialogue heavy. So that's the – I totally agree with you. That's the craft of the whole thing, is the it's the what's written and how it's being interpreted, because there's two people usually just standing in a room. There's not a lot going on. But yet it's some of the best movie making ever made because it's some of the best writing ever done. Totally agree. I think that's an interesting point and kind of how that you started as a child watching the movies. And that was what eventually influenced your writing style and how basically the baseline of how you start everything.
Yeah, because if you take the older movies, if you notice, let's say a movie like The Magnificent Seven, you have a great character like Eli Wallach. Then you have Yul Brynner. Then you have Steve McQueen. And if you listen to the dialogue between them and look at their facial expressions and what's going on, you'll be able to become a great writer because you'll know you have to switch in seconds. You don't have hours. You can't sit there and develop a character. You have to say, okay, when they see that screenshot, he may say something that's so dynamic, and the other character who people, a lot of people don't give actual the credit to the supporting characters. They just think, well, it's just this person. But if you don't have that balance in your writing, you can't have it on the screen. And then you've got to have it on the screen by two actors who can play off of each other. Like we're doing now, we're having a great conversation back and forth. What a lot of writers lose is they're writing, I went to the store and I met Billy and Billy said, but there's no emotion there. But in those older movies, if you watch them, you'll see the girl scream and then a guy may slap her and then you turn around, another guy may grab his hand real quick. And all this is in seconds. If you ever want to learn how to be a great writer, look at the movies like 12 Angry Men and look at the 12 personalities in this room. And they're all
fantastic
totally
movie. Yeah, fantastic movie, by the way. I highly recommend that one. Even if you're an actor or you're going to acting school, that's I did a little bit of that way back in the day, and that was actually one of the recommended things when you're just learning to, especially if you're looking at wanting to be a character actor, that was one of the movies they recommended that everybody should watch. And pick your favorite character and explain why you like that one. So yeah, great point.
Yeah.
Excellent point.
And I think that when you're growing in life, I was determined to have the kind of life that I saw in the movies. So if they're riding around in nice cars, then you want a nice car. Then your older brothers and them have nice cars. So you kind of had a family bond where everybody was nurturing you. When you went to school, you had your best friends. So then you turn around as a writer and you incorporate all your learning abilities and all your experiences into your writing. I've been writing for 6 years and as an established author. Now, I did a couple of books before then. I did a whole children's series. It was called The Little Cat That Slept. And the main issue about the book was to highlight the African continent. So there were the lemurs, the Gerenooks, and I knew that if they could take other stories and talk about them, then I said, you can get kids educated to learning the continent of Africa by putting them in this children's story, The Little Cat That Slept. And he's influenced by all these other characters, what's called the Strange Animals Birthday Party. And they're all going to the birthday party of the little cat. And they're trying to teach him how to honor his mother and father. One of the most important things about writing is to have moral balance in your book. I will not write terrible images of any culture, and especially being an African American. I mean, you can write them if you want to as a writer, but don't we have enough of those going on? So when I did this new book that I got out called Beyond Dreams, Nine on the Field, it's about a young lady who can pitch 103 miles an hour, but she's 90% blind. And she's got to prove to the Board of Education and the mayor and the city attorney that she's good enough to play. And she does this in an auditorium. And she becomes one of the greatest baseball players in the field at high school. Now, today, I was at my favorite place called Wendy's, and you would have thought the President of the United States came in, the way the young people were in there just chanting my name, and I got to talk to you, and this and that. So I had one of my books with me that one of the young ladies wanted. And she wanted that book because she said when she was growing up, her mother and father never encouraged her. So she said she wanted to write, but she didn't think she could do it. I said, yeah, you can. So when she was reading this book about a young lady who's in high school who has all these difficult changes, but she's able to turn her life around with her family support. She's got these coaches that like her, the students, and I create all these great environments. And it's a challenging story. So when you do things like that, then people can't wait to get the book. If you just write, everybody's on drugs, everybody's got to go to church to get saved, which is okay. I mean, if that's what you want to write, or it's always the dismal side. But if you look at the other stories, like we were talking about England and France, they were always fighting to get something better. So these guys might have taken a good movie anybody can watch. It's called The Prince of Foxes, because he wants to work for Cesare Borgia, who is conquering all of Europe. So he switches names so he can become a great soldier in his army, but he's also a painter and a poet. And he tells his mother, I can't make any money being a poet, but I can make money of being a soldier and come back to being a poet. So when you see these movies, you have to look at the underlying story, and that's how I write.
Sure. So when you were a child, besides the specific authors that you like, you started discovering, who inspired you growing up?
Inspired me was my older brothers. they to me were the epitome of success. And also some of the older guys that I just had a reunion with, I guess last year, a guy named Billy Rogers, who was an undercover agent for the Chicago Police Department. So you had all these icons, and my dad. And the most important icon that really had me going, that made me want to do something, was a man named I.S. Berlin, who owned the second largest printing company in Chicago where my dad worked. So that's where I learned art, because they used to print for Hollywood. All the books that you see, like the Jesus Christ story and all of the Alamo, he printed these books. And the printing company was three blocks long. So I used to go down there on Saturdays and sell coffee on a little truck.
Wow. Interesting, at a young age, you were not only you were influenced by just books as books, you know, printing, the printing process, the art behind what that looks like, what a proper process should look like. Very, very interesting. So you're selling coffee, and then you went through high school. How old were you when you wrote your very first book?
At my first book, I did my first book when I was like 28 years old.
Okay.
And I wanted to get involved in that because I felt, like I said, it was something I just wanted to do. And I started toying around with it and coming up with some ideas and thinking how I could eventually get into real writing. But I never really took it to the other level yet, because I got into corporate early. And again, being influenced by other people, I became a vice president for a company at 24 years old. I did the marketing for Hertz, Avis, and National Rent-A-Car. I even owned one of the first Western Union franchises in downtown Chicago when I was only 26 years old. So this driving force, but my older brother had an office downtown at 730 North LaSalle Street. And the one thing that I learned about being successful in life, you got to have a good personality and keep your word. And you got to have a strong work ethic. So everybody I would meet when I got my first job, I would say, I can do this if you promise me you can get me to the next level. And my supervisors would always say, well, we're not sure, but let's see what you could do. But I gave them 800%, so the next time you turned around, I was moving through corporate so fast. I was in the warehouse. I went from the warehouse to a management position, got another management position in the same company, then got fired for acting real crazy. I was driving my car like 100 miles an hour down the street and tore it up. So then I lost that job, but I went to another place, and the guy said, Don, I like you, and I like the cut of you, so tell you what. You don't tell them I didn't see your degree, and you could become a regional director over three states. So it has a lot to do with your educational level, but it also has a lot to do with your presentation. When I got involved in the American Management Association early, I learned that we could have the corporate list of all the CEOs. They teach you how to speak, how to dress, what to say. But the thing I told them was, when they would take me to the side and say, well, Don, you know, how come somebody else can't do this? I said, listen, if you took the average African-American male or any male and you give them these classes that you're paying $750 for in a seminar class for the American Management Association, they'll be just as good as me. But what you give them is a shirt and a tie and tell them to go to school and get a resume and open the door. You tell me, go to school, get a resume now. Call Bob, Steve, and Frank and tell them I want you in the training program. And when you leave that program, I'm going to give you a list of all the CEOs you could write and talk to who already know you in the Management Association. So see, there's a level there about the bootstrap theory only works when you have the bootstraps. Telling people to just do this and do that doesn't work.
Doesn't work because there's that, what you just described is the part that's missing, is that part that's most crucial to get them to move and get in being in that, I wouldn't call it a protective environment, but it really is. But you're in a committed situation where you're going to continue to learn and move forward and really solidify those basic foundational things that you need in order to be successful. That's a great point that you brought up, Don. I think that's, and especially, you know, from talking to you in private about the African-American community, and that phase is missing in so many different scenarios, that I think it's great that you brought that up. It's not complete, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it is. And one of the things that's important, a lot of people talk about Reginald Lewis. See, they talk about the after success. Now, yes, he was one of our first billionaires. But when he got his first really big check, $1 million check, he went to a black company that sold sausage or something. And he presented the check to the man, and the man laughed in his face and told him, there's no black man with that kind of money, so get out of my face. So he went home, and this is in his book. So when he went home, he told his mom, he had tears in his eyes. He said, I presented this guy $1 million check that I could buy his company. And the guy laughed at me and said, black men ain't got that kind of money. So his mother said, well, just keep going at it. So he was out there trying to make deals until he ran into Michael Milken and Ivan Bosky, who knew how to sell junk bonds. And they told him, they said, listen, we're going to show you how to make a deal. Well, Reginald Lewis eventually ended up buying TLC Beatrice. He had one of the largest ice cream companies in Spain. He bought out TLC Beatrice. He was just a phenomenal. He even owned McCall's pattern book. Now, I tell young people, period, and especially African-American males, read the book, Why Should White Guys Have All the Fun? And they'll see him walking down the street with six of his other friends, and they made their first $10 million deal. So then they decide, we're going to do more and more and more. The problem is, when people are asking me for information, like the young lady I talked to today, she now has a copy of my book. Then they're going to come to the classes that I'm going to be holding to show them, how do you really write this stuff? Because just telling them to write it and just write it down every day, but how do you do it? Like back to Alexandre Dumas. That was my blueprint. So if you want to be a children's writer, get everything that Dr. Seuss has written. Why? Because he's one of the most famous children writers in the world. Look at how many pages are in his book. Look at how many illustrations he's got. Look at how he put everything together. And you don't have to do it identically, but you got to have a blueprint. Without a blueprint, you're just another person out there trying to sing, write, produce, and you have no guideline.
Right. And then in effect, you don't have your own personal voice because you're just going through something that has no substance. It doesn't end anywhere. Totally understand. Fantastic. You know, I could talk to you for hours and hours, Don, and I want to get to kind of, we're moving into more present day now. I want to talk about the most recent book. Let's talk a little bit more about that last book the most recent one that you have now. But I also want to ask you, out of all of the books that you've written, which one is the one that's closest to your heart? Do you have one particular book that's more special to you than the rest of them?
The one book that's so special to me that outsells all my books is called To Have a Friend. And it's based on a family that has made it, because I wanted to have a character going from one book to the other book. So in this book, you get to meet the couple. When they first meet, they don't have anything. He wants to be a TV producer. She wants to own an art gallery. And I set up the scene where they're laying there talking on a Sunday morning. They get up, she goes downstairs, and she makes breakfast, and she's just discussing that she wants an art gallery. So he leaves the apartment, tells her he'll call her later. He goes and finds an old warehouse building, incomplete, raggedy as heck, and tells her to meet him over there with a blindfold on. And she comes into the gallery, and his cab driver is seriously, like, worried. Like, you're getting out of a cab with a blindfold on? So anyway, she goes into the gallery, the old warehouse. She sees it, and she feels just like he feels. It's just raggedy. But a year later in the next book, she's on top of the world. She's got a gallery. He's becoming a TV producer. So I take them from one level to the next level. In the third book that I love the most is called To Have a Friend, where you meet the guy that went to school with them. And he has this 28-day war with all the organized crime leaders all over the world about this couple, because his rule is he doesn't want anybody bothered outside of organized crime. He said, look, we got enough illegal politicians and judges and everybody else we could deal with, but don't bother this family, and I'm willing to go to war over this. Now, what I play up is the whole strength about friendship, and he loves their daughter. It's just a great book. But what I liked about it was in that book, people are like, man, your ending was just dynamic. It's almost like you got a James Bond thriller going on based on Chicago. And that book became number 10 in books just like it. So out of all the organized crime books that were written by the Bonanno family and some of the other guys, my book made it to number 10. And that book is really dear to me because it's got some impactful twists and turns and You just don't know what's going to go on. And the way that you took your imagination and built like the bank scene or how they interact with each other, to me, it was like writing from the 1930s and 40s. It could match any of those movies that were out there. It just had that much impact. And I took those characters and I made them have life.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, I'm inspired. And I did hear one thing, too, that I don't know which book, but I understand that President Obama and the First Lady read one of your books as well. Which one did they read? Is that a true story?
Actually, yeah, they have two. They have My Sister Tiana, which is my espionage thriller, which is part of that series. They have To Have a Friend, and they have My Sister Tiana. And they've written me back and talked about how great the book was. But the thing that was so amazing is the Secretary General of the UN that was from South Korea, he has a copy of the book. So that book there, again, is following that intrigue, suspense, romance. It's got everything that a classic thriller would have. And it's the follow-up book. So they have two books of mine. And
that's fantastic. What an honor.
I just think so much of the president. That's one of the greatest people that has been alive in this country. And you know what? He's such an inspiration because years ago, nobody expected an African-American to become president of the United States. I kind of always thought within the last 10 years it would happen because it's called the natural stage of progression. If you look at the building of Africans, we went from slavery to senators to governors to just being great in this political field because we had a drive. And a lot of people kept really discounting that, but we were back in the day being senators, United States congressmen. And so we were already growing, and we kept saying we weren't growing. And then to turn around after we had a governor of Boston, Massachusetts, which is actually just Massachusetts. But to go from Crispus Attucks, the first black man that was killed in the Revolution, to a black man leaving Chicago, Deval Patrick, and becoming one of the current governors of Massachusetts. Now, that's a success story that anybody could take and really write that. But we're so busy playing up the negatives that we don't teach the children that a guy left Chicago and became the governor of Massachusetts, the same place that had the war about America, and the first black man that was killed there was Crispus Attucks. So if we're going to learn how to write, we got to take the heart and soul of information and magnify it. So, yeah, I'm thrilled that the president has my books. I'm thrilled that the Secretary General of the UN has written my books. I've talked to the governors of Puerto Rico before. You know, people say, well, how do you do that? Because I simply tell them, I want to write something that's good, that's lasting. And so they usually say, okay, right. You know, when I was building my diversity career, I was fortunate enough to work with 37 of the major corporations in America as my sponsors. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Wendy's, Papa John's, SunTrust Bank, FedEx, all these were my clients for 10 years. So you don't keep those clients if you can't produce. They're not just giving away their money. And Coke was paying $20,000 every year for 10 years, along with Pepsi. SunTrust Bank was paying $20,000. So it showed you that you could come from those stories that you learned as a child and take them into your real life. So there's so many influences in my life that it helped me to get to where I am.
Sure, and that's fantastic. And I imagine also the message, too. And, you know, hopefully this message transcends all different communities and races and color lines and genders and you name it. But, you know, there comes a time when you really lock on something that you believe is important to yourself. It doesn't matter what your age might be at the time. You cannot listen to the people around you that are going to try to pull you back from, you know, focusing on what it is you want to do. There are going to be those people that feel that what you're doing is wrong. The whole world may not agree with you, but if it's right in your own mind, then that's what you should continue to do. And so many people fail. They stop short because they bend to peer pressure. They don't follow what their gut tells them. So I think it's really an inspiring story, Don. It really is. And I think it's a message to people from everywhere, from young people who want to write, from young people that want to get into the corporate world, from young people that want to just get up and do good work every day, no matter what that means to them, need to read your books, that need to listen to your message, listen to your show, and really take time with it and study that and study what it is you're saying, because you're giving them a lifetime of experience that they need to know what they're listening to. So amazing, Don, amazing. And what I want to do now, because we're getting right to the end of the time limit here, before we go, I want my listeners to know how they can get their hands on your books and your games and everything else you got going on.
Well, they can go to dsmpublications.net. And they will see my website that I've had for a while, and it's constantly growing. But they can go to DSM, which is my initials, publications.net, and they can get all of my books. And we're constantly hiring narrators to do our narration. I want to be one of the largest animation and production companies dealing with all these products. So I have a children's board game they can get, where we came from Santa Claus versus the Aliens, the first children's book, to Santa Claus and the Robot Wars. Then I developed the board game, and it's being played all across the country. So I'm taking that imagination, and I created that board game. And this year, we're going to bring the characters out live, like Dora the Explorer, where the children will be able to come and do a contest with the game and meet the characters inside of the book, live and in person. So to me, all the stuff that I learned how to read and learn from the greats, I say apply that to your own life.
Fantastic. Fantastic. DSMpublications.net. You heard it, folks. That's where you go. I expect people listening to get there, to look at that website, to buy some of this material, because it's fantastic stuff. And it's not like a lot of the crap that's out there, excuse my language, but you know, you read it once and it's forgettable. This is something you can continue to read over and over again. You can study it. You're going to pick up new things as you go through. It's a real work going forward. So my last question to you, Don, is what, besides, I know you're working on two books at the same time, I understand, but what's in, besides that, what's in the future for Don? What do you got going on? What do you see over the horizon?
Well, again, what I see over the horizon is the animation series, the films, because I got a lot of people in Hollywood now talking about turning my books into films. I got a friend of mine that sings, and you've heard her songs on your show. Her name is Lena. She's presented my work to Clint Eastwood. You know, people are seeing what I'm doing. And because you're a new writer and stuff, you're just getting your credit. You got to wait your time. You got to wait your turn. But the amazing part is there are people that have all 12 of my books. There are people that have 12 books in the games. And from one of my books, I took photographs traveling the country with a cell phone. And I sold some of those paintings from that cell phone for $500 a piece at a mansion just last year. It's called The Book of Inspiration. But all that came from studying other people who said if they could do it, I could do it. And I knew it was going to take time, but the next few vehicles are the animations and the plays, because you keep taking what I call the natural stage of progression, and your work keeps evolving. So eventually, 2-3 years, I plan on seeing some movies with my name on it.
Fantastic. Yeah, I hope so. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to be in your corner cheering for you, too. And lastly, you have a great talk show that you do. Talk a little bit about when that is and how people can tune into your show as well.
Well, it comes on every Friday. It's been coming on for 6 years. June 11th, I'll be celebrating 7 years every Friday. Haven't missed a Friday. It's called the Don S. McClure Show, and it comes on every Friday. And what I love about the show, it plays great music, but it always has a great message, an encouraging message for people to say, you know what, this guy is always talking about, look inside yourself, be the best that you could be, don't listen to this negativity. But it comes on every Friday at 7 p.m., It comes on Blog Talk Radio, one of the largest networks for blog. And, you know, what I like about that show is they've stuck with me for 6 years, going into 7, and they just offered me some more time slots. They're like, Don, people are tuning in. We've got over 400,000 listeners. They're giving listening parties in different cities. They're writing me, laughing at my corny jokes that I tell every Friday. The stories that we tell. But you know what? But it's such a joy to be able to do what you do and love it. You know, so I never feel like I'm going to work. I just feel like I'm being creative.
Yeah, and the thing I took away when I was your guest, which I was very honored to be a guest on your show, I was really into the energy that you can feel your energy, even though you're listening to your voice, you can feel the energy, you can feel the passion. And where I come from and what I believe in, I think you need to have that type of, you need to be amped like that every day. Do whatever you can to do something good for somebody every day. But if you don't believe it yourself, you're not going to be able to convey it effectively. And I think you're a master at that because you believe it, you live it, and you inspire a whole bunch of people. And I really appreciate you being on the show. And I will make sure to put everything up on Facebook and make sure they know how to get to your website. And yeah, go from there. Any last words, my friend?
Yeah, I want people to recognize the fact that you do a great job, man. I listen to your show. You have such information that I'm excited. Matter of fact, a couple of the songs that I'm playing Friday came from listening to your show. And you know what's so good about you guys, you, Wes, Sharon, you have such a solid base to listen to. And the information is just, it's great from the morning to the afternoon. But I want to salute you for having such, you know, desire and passion in what you do. Because without people like you, you know, the others can't grow. It's all about giving back to each other. So my last words is you guys keep doing what you're doing, because we talk about you on our show. And we share that brotherhood, that common alliance of making the world better for everybody, not just one culture, but for everybody.
Absolutely. And I have to tell you, it's quite an honor. And it's an honor to be a part of this radio community. You know, my father was a radio guy, musician, jazz musician, and it's funny how closely he kind of followed in his footsteps. And so I was influenced by my parents as well, but he'll be real happy that I'm involved in this. And it's an honor for you to say that. And it's great to have you on the show. And we appreciate everything that you do, and we're going to be watching closely, and we can't wait for the next things to come out. And I'd like to have another conversation again soon. So you're always welcome to come back absolutely anytime, sir. We can maybe when you come out with that other book, maybe we talk about what you're working on and talk about what's out there right now. So, Don, thanks again. Appreciate you being on the Big Jazz Show. Everybody out here appreciates you, and you have a great evening, okay?
Same to you, and I really appreciate it being on the show. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thank you. Take care.
All right.
And good. That was awesome, Don. Thank you, man.
Yeah, man, you're an awesome guy, man. And I'm going to check it out later on and see, you know, I'm going to cut the episode off and see what happened with it. And then I